This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Don't forget to stick around to the end of the episode to get the latest news around the Chicago area. But first, we're catching you up on some twists and turns in the back and forth over tariffs. The Supreme Court struck down President Trump's global tariffs and deemed them illegal. But a rather defiant Trump says he has no plans on backing down.
We have alternatives. Could be more money. We'll take in more money and we'll be a lot stronger for it. We're taking in hundreds of billions of dollars.
Just hours after that ruling, Trump announced a new global tariff. But can he do that? And what do all the changes mean for businesses, big and small? At the table, we had Cecile Shea, who's a non-resident senior fellow on security and diplomacy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. And later in the episode, you'll hear Steven Woldenberg, who's a senior vice president of sales for Learning Resources. Now, Learning Resources, if you don't know, it's a Vernon Hills-based company that challenged Trump's tariffs in front of the Supreme Court last summer. They argued that the tariffs were illegally imposed under an emergency powers law rather than getting approval from Congress. Here's Cecile.
I was not surprised. And I was on, I think you were on vacation a couple of months ago. I knew it would be struck down. I thought it might actually be unanimous or 7-2. So if anything surprised me, it said it was 6-3.
Why were you so confident it would be struck down?
Because it was clear that the law was not about tariffs. You know, it was clear that it gave the president certain authorities, but those authorities were not revenue raising. And that's what all of the justices said. They disagreed on their kind of background great policy reason, but they all agreed in the end that the president cannot raise revenue without congressional authority and that the law does not give the president the authority to raise revenue. It gives him the authority to block certain exports or imports, but not to tariff imports.
Did you see the president's initial response
to
the news?
It was you know, fierce, and I'm not sure what's going to happen the next time he has something before the Supreme Court, because
right.
I'm guessing they are not so predisposed to him at this moment with the things he said.
Let's hear what he said at a press conference Friday afternoon.
It's incorrect. Their decision's incorrect. But it doesn't matter because we have very powerful alternatives that have been approved by this decision. You know, they've been approved by the decision for those that thought they had us.
So as I teased there at the top, he initially announced a 10% levy on all goods coming into the U.S. Then Saturday said it would be increased to 15%. What is this alternative that he's talking about?
So let's take a step back first, because a lot of the headlines on the decision have been really a little erroneous. The president has, since 2016, placed various tariff regimes on products and countries under several different laws, not just the International Economic Emergency Powers Act, which is what this court case was about. And while the Supreme Court could, in theory, have struck down some of these other laws, it did not. So the tariffs, for instance, on China remain in place. The tariffs on steel and aluminum and wood furniture and kitchen cabinets, they remain in place.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff is not going away. Now, what he said is he wants to now use a different law, which is Section 122. 2, which came out during the Nixon administration, to place these 15% tariffs. He chose 15% because the law itself gives the president the right to put up to 15% tariffs globally in the case of a balance of payments emergency. And that's really the issue. We do not have a balance of payments emergency. We probably can't because we're no longer on the gold standard. And this law was passed and, you know, it's you're going to see justices all around the country now having to become experts on monetary policy and monetary history. But the law was passed in response to a specific emergency in the early 70s, which no longer exists. Mm. So if it is challenged in court, I would expect that it too may fall. But it has a 150-day deadline anyway. So these tariffs will end in 150 days, even if they're not struck down, unless Congress extends them. Mm. And I would doubt Congress wants to extend them.
I'm always surprised sometimes when Trump finds these different loopholes. I'm like, does he just have a team that's just really doing their homework here? Like, how did he know that he could pull off and possibly impose these new tariffs?
Well,
or
he's,
can
you know,
he?
His people have had 4 or 5 months to look for other ways. The irony is this was—
because they also anticipated that it would get struck down.
Yeah. I mean, they knew that. I mean, I doubt they told him, sir, it's definitely going to fail. But, you know, I'm sure they knew that they were probably going to lose, especially if you watch the oral arguments over the IEEPA case, the Emergency Economic Powers case. So they knew, and they've been looking, and— you know, we'll see what some of the experts come. Maybe they have some clever argument to say that a balance of payments emergency, which is, can the U.S. pay for its overseas imports? Can it pay its overseas creditors? And the answer is yes. We have plenty of cash. We make the reserve currency.
Yeah.
We can't run out of the reserve currency because we make the reserve currency. So we're not in any danger at all of not being able to pay our overseas bills, which is what that law refers to. But I think they're thinking, well, it'll at least buy them some time and keep the president happy for a while.
So from your view then, of course, again, back and forth here with tariffs, are they in, are they not? I mean, what are the immediate impacts to businesses?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So first of all, if you are affected, if you are a business affected by either Section 232 tariffs or Section 301 tariffs, and, you know, this is more make work for the lawyers of America are happy, then it really has no effect on you. On those basic tariffs. Now, if you were also paying the global tariffs, the so-called reciprocal tariffs for certain countries, you're probably now going to keep paying tariffs. They may go up. If you were only paying 10%, they're going to go up to 15%. But if you were trying to import from Brazil and were facing 50% tariffs on products from Brazil, those are now going down to 15%. In addition, if you import from China, these new 15% are on top of the Section 301 tariffs that you're already paying. On the other hand, if you are paying tariffs on steel or aluminum or wood products, these do not stack on top as of today. But that changed 4 times over the weekend,
goodness.
Sasha, 4 times. So who knows what it's going to be tomorrow.
And that's why you're here. So before we bring in another guest here, I just want to sum up from you. I mean, is this really as big of a blow to the president as it's being made out to be, if he can just turn around and say, I'm going to implement an alternative?
So I think it is a blow in 2 ways. First of all, I think a lot of people in the U.S. have thought the court was always going to rule with the president. And some of that is just that a lot of the big cases haven't gotten to the court yet, so there were temporary rulings that seemed to be in his favor. And part of it is, you know, yeah, I mean, they ruled pretty substantially, including 2 of the justices that he appointed, Gorsuch and Coney Bryant. They ruled against him. So in that level, it is big. And secondly, it is saying that, you know, no, the president doesn't just get to tariff without congressional authority. And Gorsuch, in his separate opinion, there was a lot of sniping back and forth, even between the judges who agreed that this law should be overturned. But in his separate opinion, he did chastise Congress. And he said, you know, you guys need to do your jobs. That's part of the problem here.
Yeah. Now we're going to bring another voice into the conversation. Steven Woldenberg is Senior Vice President of Sales for Learning Resources. Now, for folks who don't know, Learning Resources is a Vernon Hills-based company, and they're the ones that challenged Trump's tariffs in front of the Supreme Court last summer, arguing that they were illegally imposed under an emergency powers law rather than getting approval from Congress. Steven, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to know what's been going through your mind since Friday and that Supreme Court ruling.
When the ruling came down, it was very gratifying and validating that the Supreme Court agreed with our position that IEEPA did not provide for tariffs. And, you know, it was a bit of a surreal moment when we found out the news. And it's been a bit of a whirlwind since then.
Mm-hmm. Hearing that Trump shortly after had this backup plan, how did that part make you feel?
We always expected that there would be tariffs after the ruling. We were confident. We knew that we were going to win the case. We felt that way for months now. And the president and his team have been clear that they had a plan B and they were going to continue imposing tariffs after the ruling. And so we weren't surprised to see that they immediately came out with 10% tariffs and then again increased them to 15%, mm-hmm. continuing forward sort of the chaotic nature of having to operate a business in this environment where tariff rates constantly change. It just becomes difficult to manage a business when you don't know your tax rates. And that's basically what's going on right now.
Yeah. I want you to tell us about your business. For folks who aren't aware of Learning Resources, tell us more about what you all do and how is the business doing right now?
Yeah, so we're a fourth generation family business with roots in Northern Illinois that go back over 100 years. We have a family of brands. We make educational toys. We make supplemental curriculum for classrooms and pet toys as well. The business environment over the past year has been very challenging due to tariffs, and it's caused a lot of dislocation, not only for us, but businesses around the world, too.
Yeah. Tell us more about the impact there. Like, how much were the tariffs costing you, and what did you have to do in turn? What changes did you have to make?
In 2024, we paid just over $2 million in tariffs to the government. This was before the IEEPA tariffs. In 2025, just for the IEEPA tariffs alone, not for the, like you were talking about previously, the Section 301 tariffs that came, that Trump 1.0 imposed in 2018 and 2019, mm-hmm. We paid over $10 million in IEEPA-related tariffs in 2025. And that was obviously highly disruptive. In order to fund that, we had to make some hard decisions about cutting expenses, slowing investments, investing less in marketing. And we also had to work feverishly to resource our supply chain. So at one point in time, we estimated about over one third of our company, we have 500 employees here. We're working on resourcing products outside of China into other markets like Vietnam or India. And I can tell you, coming into 2025, we had maybe one or two people working on that full time. Mm-hmm. So one or two, way up to, you know, close to 170 people. That was a big change. And that's just one of the impacts that tariffs has had on our business.
And you've mentioned
many others too.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you mentioned a few times there, I just want to clarify for folks listening, IEEPA, that's the, once again, that's the International Emergency Economic Powers Act that Stephen's referring to. Cecile, what's going through your mind as you hear Stephen sort of break down what it's been like to work around these tariffs?
Yeah, so I think that something we've talked about that doesn't get discussed often enough is that it's not just the tariffs that are costing businesses. It's hiring the lawyers and the customs agents and the lobbyists in some cases to deal with them. And if you're a very large company, if you're Home Depot or Walmart, you have people on staff or you can hire them, and you're dealing with, you know, enormous numbers of products, right? If you're a small business or a tiny business, you can't afford lobbyists, mm-hmm. you know, and you don't have people on staff, so you're having to hire out to deal with the enormous amount of paperwork and to try to understand what the law says. And you probably are joining professional associations that are trying to lobby commerce to get your products exempted. So there's all these other costs to society and to businesses that are not even being captured by this 15%, 20%, 30% discussion about the tariffs.
Yeah. Could businesses that already paid tariffs receive a refund? That's been swirling around in the media. What's the answer to that? And what could that look like?
Yeah. So, it's interesting that Governor Pritzker has come up with his idea, right?
Right.
He's going to apply on behalf of Illinois businesses.
Everybody gets a $1,700 check.
And I'm guessing Stephen would probably prefer an actual check. But nobody knows, because nobody's ever had to do this before. And, don't forget, too, in the last year, the agencies that are most involved in tariffs, the State Department, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Treasury, have lost enormous numbers of employees. So there's not even a lot of people around to deal with this question of who's going to handle the paperwork if there are refunds.
Right. Stephen, what are your thoughts on the refund conversation? Are you hopeful that you'll get one?
We're going to let the process play out, but we believe we will. And I, you know, what we've been saying, and I would say here too, is they really had no trouble taking the money. That was pretty easy for them. Mm-hmm. It should be pretty simple for them to turn it around and give it back to us.
How much would you say you're owed?
Well, you know, with every day that goes by, the cost was rising. So I don't have the most up-to-date figure, but it's well in excess of $10 million at this point.
Wow. What are the conversations looking like right now, just among other small business owners?
I think everybody was very grateful for the Supreme Court in making this decision, and we're hopeful that we have a more measured approach going forward on the tariff front to provide more certainty for businesses to make investments and move forward. I think that one of the things that we took away from the Supreme Court ruling was just a reinforcement of rule of law. Mm. And, you know, our case really touched on things that dated back all the way to the founding of the country. No taxation without representation, fulfilling James Madison's vision of the country with checks and balances, three branches of government. And that's what we saw take place here, was the Supreme Court reinforced those foundational principles of our democracy.
And I just want to say I appreciate that Stephen and his company pursued this. I think there's a certain rising tide of ennui or helplessness in the country. Oh, we can't change the Constitution. Oh, we can't change Congress. Oh, we have no power. But we do have power, and we do have to try. Sometimes it won't work, but I do think that if people see an injustice or something that's wrong, they need to at least try and let the system work. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. In this case, it did. So I think we all owe Stephen and his company and the other folks who, you know, provided briefs for this case, some of whom are very powerful, for standing up for the rule of law and the interpretation of what Congress meant when it passed IEPA.
Yeah. So I want to hear from both of you on this. I mean, what is next? How do we interpret what is next? Things are moving so quickly, right? Do we just wait and see what happens? You first, Cecile.
I mean, we're going to see if someone sues over Section 122. You know, it ends in 150 days unless Congress extends it, and I'm not sure it could actually reach the Supreme Court in time. So we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. There are some members of Congress who are saying they want to pass a law giving the president authority to tariff whoever he wants, whenever he wants. Gosh, I've looked at the polling. I just don't think voting for that would be a really good idea right now. But, you know, who knows? And so the president's going to push for tariff authority. And if he gets it, then all bets are off, really. And then we have the refund issue. And also you're going to see, again, countries that had negotiated the amount of the IEPA tariffs down. Right. So some of them were paying very low levels, and now they're back up to 15%. So you're going to see this whole new round now, I think, of exhausted countries who
Yes.
are pretty sick of the U.S. right about now and this trade policy, having to come back to the well and say, OK, we want the same deal we had before. So those are the three things we're probably going to see.
The cycle kind of continues here.
Yes.
Yeah. Stephen, what's next for you and for Learning Resources?
Well, we're going to have to react to how the president chooses to impose tariffs next and respond accordingly. Our perspective is that time is not on his side. So as we approach the midterms, it's increasingly difficult, we think, for the administration to impose large tax increases, because that's what tariffs are, on the American public, because Congress needs to get reelected. And if they start to realize their job's on the line here, we don't think that they're going to continue to support this in the way they have up to this point. So that's what we're hopeful for, or maybe a more measured approach. But we'll have to see how it plays out.
We've been talking with Stephen Woldenberg, who's a Senior Vice President of Sales for Learning Resources based in Vernon Hills, and Cecile Shea, who's a non-resident Senior Fellow on Security and Diplomacy at the Chicago Council on Global Affairs. Thank you both so much.
Thanks, Sasha.
Thank you.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration is designed to prepare students to lead in the social sector by combining classroom learning with field education and five focused pathways. The final deadline for the program is April 1st. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork.
Now let's turn to the big news of the day. At the table to break down the biggest headlines and stories was Lisa Labas, a WBEZ anchor, Mike Davis, WBEZ's theater reporter, and Violet Miller, a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. We started with Governor J.B. Pritzker's response to the tariff drama. Here's Lisa.
Yeah, he sort of ran off a little note, a little memo to the president.
He was like,
here's what you need to do for me. Okay, so these are unconstitutional. We want a refund.
Yes.
Pay us back. And it's a lot of money.
So if successful, he's saying the money would go into state coffers. How much money are we talking about
here? He's saying on behalf of the people of Illinois, I demand a refund of $1,700 for every family in Illinois. And so he calculates there are about 5,105,448,000 households in the state.
Okay.
And so that total amount of money that the federal government is supposed to cut a check for Illinois is $8 billion plus. So it's a lot of money. And
we just got our calculators out, Lisa.
I'm sure the federal government is just going to say, okay, sure, here you go.
Are you waiting for your $1,700 refund check,
Violet? It's pocket change, really.
I know.
Pocket change. Speaking of Governor Pritzker, he was busy this weekend. He stopped by a union rally. What was he doing there?
Yeah, so he stopped by the National Association of Letter Carriers, so your mail carriers, postal workers union. They had a rally yesterday just to kick off their bargaining season. They start on Wednesday, so, they are getting ready. But J.B. Pritzker was there. A lot of, big names in politics. Danny Davis, Senator Durbin was there. Mm. Durbin and Davis, really touting how the union had helped them get elected in previous years. And then Pritzker taking the chance to his own chuckles and a little protest from him to chance of 48 as he was introduced as the 48th president of the United States.
Oh, wow. What are the letter carriers union's demands?
Yeah, so they're looking for better pay. They're also looking for a higher uniform allowance. They're annually given just around $550 for their uniform for year round. So you think about, what kind of gear you need to be outside in Chicago every day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
$550, they're saying, is not really cutting it. So they're pushing for that, as well as some different, worker protections, more boilerplate stuff.
Like safety measures.
Yeah, of course. But this comes on the heels of, a tough year for federal unions. The Trump administration really hammered down on them and canceled several contracts. So it could be a tough bargaining season.
Mike, Chicago's Newberry Library is getting the chance to help save disappearing languages, which sounds amazing. What are the details of this?
Yes, they got $4 million from the Mellon Foundation to help just widen access to indigenous languages. And they have a super wide collection. It's like a million manuscripts of different indigenous languages. And they're going to run programs to help people access and learn these languages and keep them alive.
Yeah. So where does the Newberry Library come into all of this?
Well, the Newberry Library, it always gets a little fuzzy when we talk about where museums get their artifacts. But way back in 1911, a wealthy businessman had this collection of Bibles that have been translated and all of these different stories. And it's like, it represents like 300 languages. So since 1911, they've been collecting all of these artifacts. And now that we have like a national emergency for disappearing indigenous languages, they are in a unique position to help people access and relearn these languages.
How incredible. Now, Lisa.
Yes.
We have talked and talked and talked about the Chicago Bears looking for that new home.
Oh, the Bears?
Yes. They're looking for a new home that is not Soldier Field. Huh. But in the backdrop, the Chicago Park District says it's got its eye on the stadium that the Bears don't want.
Well, right. So, you know, Taylor Swift and Beyonce and I don't know who else was at Soldier Field over the past several years. But these concerts and non-Bears events really drive the revenue that's coming into Soldier Field. And so the Park District is pitching this $630 million plan to upgrade the stadium. I believe there's a dome involved. But that would help, you know, house major concerts and events. So maybe as well, the Bears could get a break. They could, this could help with the $90 million lease penalty if they break their lease at Soldier Field and move to Hammond or somewhere else.
Yeah, this is a great idea, especially the dome. I'm sorry. I come from a city where we have a dome. And I don't know how y'all did it for so long.
I got
long.
Rained on at that Beyonce concert.
Did you?
They postponed it for like 3 hours.
Oh, yeah, was that night two?
Rained
two?
On.
Yes.
A dome, please.
You know, I mean, isn't there this Chicago, like, we're so tough. We can go to a concert in the snow.
There's a magic to it. It's right? Like when Prince did the Super Bowl.
Magic.
Like,
sure,
you know,
sure.
It rained then.
Oh,
I'm sure we can have that here.
I mean, sure. But so where are they planning on getting all this money?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I don't know. So who knows? Probably from you and me.
Right.
Taxpayers.
And Mike, you're from Seattle, right? Doesn't it rain a lot there?
Yes.
So why are you scared of a little rain?
Well, this was different. It was like a storm. Like they had to evacuate.
It was a lot.
A whole thing.
Man, I totally
Beyonce
remember.
Beyonce can do anything.
Beyonce is
she
magical.
She can make the weather.
She kept performing. You can stand there and watch. All right. I want to turn, Mike, to the city's arts organizations. WBEZ and the Sun-Times surveyed the top arts and culture nonprofits in Chicago about their diversity efforts and progress since 2020. Tell us more about this.
Yes. After 2020, in response to George Floyd, a bunch of arts organizations in the city made pledges towards racial diversity and diversifying their programming and all of these types of things. Erica Thompson of the Sun-Times and I did like sister stories, I guess you could say, where she dug into the demographic data of the top 20 arts and culture organizations by revenue size. I looked at individual artists and we were just like, did they keep these promises?
Mm-hmm.
So Erica did amazing research from 2021 to 2025. So many numbers. You know, I'm not a numbers guy. Erica is really great with numbers. But what it told us is that there was a lot of progress made. They didn't quite get to where they promised to be, but most organizations are walking in the right direction. One thing that jumped out at me that I feel like I have to say, when we look at board diversity, every single one of those boards did report that they got more diverse. Only one organization regressed, and that was Chicago Public Media. But everyone else was going in the right direction. Just keeping it real, just being transparent. But everyone else did, so... Yes, Erica did a follow-up. There were a couple of organizations that did not submit their data. They just submitted, so she, again, upgraded. But everything stayed pretty consistent.
Mm-hmm. Wow, interesting stuff. I got to check that out. I'm glad you all teamed up because, you know, you mentioned the fact that she's so good at the numbers and you're looking at things more broadly, and that's why you were paired together,
I think.
yesterday, Violet, parents from Hoffman Estates headed downtown. They were protesting at the Archdiocese office. What's going on?
Yeah, they protested first in front of Holy Name Cathedral after attending Mass there, and they marched over to the Archdiocese office. You know, they're protesting. There are six Catholic schools across the city and suburbs that are shutting down. These families were specifically from St. Hubert and Hoffman Estates. You know, they're saying that the financials that they've seen from the Archdiocese don't really line up, that their schools shouldn't be closing. And so they were calling on Cardinal Supich to reverse the decision. But, you know, the Archdiocese told me yesterday that decision is not changing no matter how much folks fundraiser or push back.
Mm-hmm. So parents, what are they saying?
You know, I mean, they're frustrated. They're worried about, you know, if they want a Catholic education for their kids, they're saying that they're going to have to go outside the district, which means they don't get to use the bus systems, you know, a number of other things that could potentially be an issue. So they're worried about, you know, obviously their time. But, you know, and also the fact that at this point, you know, classes are starting to fill up for alternatives. So they've been fighting to keep this school open. But, you know, these kids might have a little bit of trouble finding somewhere now.
Mm-hmm. Now we turn to Lisa, our dinosaur correspondent.
Oh, my gosh.
She's got some fun news. There's a new discovery that some people will be happy to hear.
Oh, the hell heron. Have you heard this?
No.
Okay, so this is a fish-eating giant species of Spinosaurus, which okay. I don't know what that is, but a UChicago-led team of paleontologists first discovered a piece of bone in the Central Sahara. This was in 2019, so ages ago now. But they went back several times. They learned this bone was the head crest of this never-before-seen species of dinosaur. They're calling it the hell heron. A statement from UChicago says this is the first indisputable evidence of a new spinosaurid found in more than a century. And some of this is, some of these replicas are going to the Children's Museum next month, which is great because we all know kids just can't get enough of dinosaurs.
Oh, absolutely. And you know who else can't get enough of dinosaurs?
Violet Miller.
Violet Miller, who looks like she's going to burst out of her chair.
I could go for so long about this.
Tell me, what is it about the Spinosaurus that gets you excited?
I mean, they're exceptionally rare. Like, this is a really, really big find. You know, like the press release said, I mean, it's one of the first Spinosaurids in over 100 years. You know, very rarely do you find these skeletons. Their bones, if I remember correctly, were not as dense, and so they didn't fossilize as well, but their teeth do. So their teeth flood fossil markets. But, you know, the rest of them is a lot harder to find. So
yeah.
This is a big deal, new species. And if you've seen Jurassic Park 3, then you know what a Spinosaurus is.
What about you, Mike? Are you into this stuff?
I love dinosaurs. I just love being able to go to the museums and, like, see the size when they have the scale model bones. Like, it's breathtaking.
Yeah. Well, know what else was breathtaking? Your latest feature. You did a little bit of improv. I was captivated. I love that stuff, right? But you recently looked at a specific kind of improv, Mike. It was an improv troupe out in the suburbs. What should we know?
We should know that this partnership between the Bit Theater in Aurora and Awesome Life Academy in Naperville is just a really, really special. Like, I don't like to make it about myself, but on the day that I went, like, I'm listening to stories about Renee Good in my car. I had seen the video of her death on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just so not in the headspace for comedy. And as soon as I walked in, so all of these youth have special needs. Most of them have Down syndrome or they're autistic.
Okay.
I walked in that room and they don't know me. They were so happy to see me.
Oh, wow.
They were so happy to see each other. Their parents were there. Their parents know each other. Everybody is hugging and they're laughing before the show starts. So then when the improv starts and these kids are like shouting out some of the craziest topics, it was just, I needed that.
Uh-huh.
Like it was really, really uplifting.
Let's listen to a little bit of that.
What is a relationship people have, like mom and dad, or brother and sister? Girlfriend and boyfriend.
Basically, it's all about activities which promote social interaction and life skills.
So how was the show that you saw overall?
The show was amazing.
Yeah.
It was so funny. And some of the kids—
Seems so lively, too.
Yes. Some of the kids in the crowd actually take improv classes themselves. So they were so into the games. They were kicking the comedians out of the games. it was just a really, really, really fun time.
And that last voice that we heard there is Awesome Life participant Clayton Mills. Now you can listen to Mike's full story. I promise you'll be full of smiles. It's up online right now at WBEZ.org. Now, before we wrap, Violet, I wonder what other news is on your radar because you stay busy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the dinosaur stuff has really been It's everything. You know, that's, I've been deep diving. I've
Are
been,
you covering it, it or is back. This just
no,
personal?
No, this is personal. Okay. This is simply my own interest. You know, that's, you know, big. Obviously, we have a lot going on in national politics. But, you know, again, I'm just looking ahead to the primaries. You know, we're less than a month out now.
Yes.
A lot of these races are really narrowing. You're starting to see, especially these crowded fields, you know, it's really starting to become apparent in some of them which are the front runners. And so I think it's interesting to see, you know, where this is going to come down to. I mean, mm-hmm. It's going to be a really interesting election season.
For sure. Keep it right here on WBEZ.org as well as SunTimes.com. We've got the very latest as this election season rolls on. Violet Miller of the SunTimes and WBEZ's Lisa Labas and Mike Davis. Thanks for listening to In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. Join me here every weekday for in-depth coverage of Chicago news and culture. Let's talk again soon.